Hi, everybody. This is Dave Hodges. I'm the host of The Common Sense Show, and we are the show that is freeing America one enslaved mind at a time. We're really glad we could be with you, and we have a terrific segment for you with Paul Preston from Agenda 21 Radio. He's also the president of the New California Movement, and it intersects with what we're going to talk about, which is how we're being undermined by the cartels, China, Mexico, the Obama administration officials. We're going to lay it all out for you. There's just too many cast of characters to cover here in the prelim. I want to let you know that there's a couple of groups that make it possible for us to come to you. One is Ready Made Resources, my good friend Bob Griswold, who will consult with you for free. I call him King Prepper. Everything you want, he has. Go to readymaderesources.com. Look at the vast list of stuff he has, and then give him a call and talk with him about what he thinks you need for where you're at with your prepping. That's readymaderesources.com. We're also brought to you by preparewithdave.com. That is our storable food company that we do business with, and it's the best in the country, 70% off. We're holding that sale probably through April or May, and we have restaurant-quality food, 25-year shelf life, and even FEMA says you need 6 months of storable food. Don't let the grass grow under your feet. If you haven't equipped your family with at least 6 months, and we recommend 2 years, but if you haven't got at least 6 months, you need to get started right now. Go to preparewithdave.com. And then finally, ladies and gentlemen, I wanted to mention to you about our good friends at Virtual Shield. Virtual Shield is fantastic, and the reason I say that is because they keep the bad guys out of your computer, and they keep people from tracking you online. Go to hidewithdave.com. Now, we've got the credit where credit's due for who brings us this show and this segment. Paul Preston really needs no introduction. We've already introduced him, but he's on the show a lot. Why? Because he's got great info. Paul, thanks for joining us. I know how busy you are, so we appreciate you joining us late in the evening.
Well, Dave, it's always good to be with you and your audience.
Yeah, well, I get requests for you seemingly every week. Let's break it down. I made a quote. I kind of coined this little phrase, and I put it in a lot of articles. If people like Pelosi and Ocasio-Cortez and that band of liberal Democrats, if they're not doing something illegal with border crime, then why should they care if we screen people coming into the country? Because after all, we are admitting immigrants. We are being humane. We need them here for our workforce. So why is this a problem for them? And then we've been talking about Humboldt County and what's going on there, and all the forces that are coming against you in the New California Movement, which are some of the same people coming out of Humboldt County. Paul, how do you respond to all this?
Well, you know, there's only one reason that we have the situation at the border, and that's there's two elements of the same reason. It's all criminal behavior. And the two elements are drugs and human trafficking. And in the modern day, trafficking in human flesh and slavery, which is what we have been calling it for years now on Agenda 21 Radio. And I, you know, back in the day when I was a school superintendent working with kids and at-risk youth and at-risk communities, there were two elements that were driving a lot of the economies in a lot of the communities: drugs and trafficking in human flesh and slavery. And the trafficking has gotten itself corporatized now over the years, and a lot of foster agencies and agencies throughout the United States are directly involved in trafficking humans from Central America and South America and other parts of the world that come across our border. Once they get across, they have certain rights, and if they're unaccompanied minors, and of course that's even better because they find their way into the foster care system. And once in the system, they generate a large amount of money for who the fostering agencies are, and then hence the parents that take over these kids. And I'm not disparaging the really good work that a lot of foster parents do. They're really dedicated to doing the right thing for foster children. And I know, Dave, you've worked with a lot of foster children and a lot of foster parents who do the right thing. But there has now been the rise of what I call modern-day slavery and trafficking of human flesh and slavery. And plus, there's the other element that's just absolutely rampaging through our society, and that's sex trafficking that's going on. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of employers out there that are actually using people as slaves. And this is something that's right in front of our face. It's hiding in plain sight. But these two elements are the major money for the cartels worldwide.
Well, when you and I first spoke about Humboldt County, kind of an old by the way comment when we were talking about Calexit, I heard from Marilyn Rupar, who I've interviewed before, and she was a buyer for Walmart, and she uncovered a lot of, well, should we say, unjust labor in China that violated human rights. And she said, I can't continue with this. And we interviewed her about that. But she heard this part about Humboldt County, and she contacted me and says, Dave, I used to live there. And then she started to say, it's a whole lot worse than what you're reporting. And I thought what I was reporting and what the Netflix documentary Murder Mountain covered was bad enough. But she said, Dave, the Sinaloas have moved in big time. Right. And now we're finding out the Chinese are there. Now we're finding out they're laundering money out of that area into HSBC Bank. And they're trying to build up Calexit again. I'd like to get your response to that, too.
Well, we have known for quite some time, this goes back 10, 15, 20 years ago, that in Humboldt County there's been a lot of bad actors that have come and gone. And clearly the Chinese have settled in there since the mid-90s. And we also know about other Asian gang elements that are there, and especially up in when you get into the other counties like Siskiyou County, which is a little bit further northeast of Humboldt County. But, you know, you also have now, especially since the Obama era, the sort of invasion of the Taliban, and the Taliban are there working overtime as well. And it's the same old thing. What they do up there, they're trafficking in humans, they're trafficking in weapons, and they're trafficking in illegal drugs. And primarily it was marijuana for a long time, but then it started turning into opium and heroin. So this has been long known, but I guess the most recent addition has been the Taliban over the last 5 or 6 years.
Were you aware that Humboldt County leads the country in missing persons?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Are they ending up in these enterprises that you mentioned at the top of the hour?
Yeah, or dead. That's what I understand.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I agree. I've read about the shallow graves that are uncovered by animals, and people come across them when they're hiking. And I don't know why anyone would want a vacation there. But the thing that gets me here is that how can you have this many missing people and there hasn't been federal attention brought to it?
I think that there's a fair amount of just hands off by the federal government, and certainly during the Obama era there was. You know, the Obama era was nothing more than large-scale criminal enterprises being developed all throughout the United States, and Humboldt County was a big part of that. And as were other counties, you know, throughout the United States. So look at Chicago. I mean, it's just been a hotbed. And, you know, like I said, there's others scattered around. You have New York, you have Florida. But these all started to really, really grow with the advent of the Mexican-style cartels, which really don't just operate in Mexico or in California or Texas, but they also operate internationally act in concert with other criminal and cartel types. You know, you go to the Philippines and Duterte, who's the president over there, he's taken a very, very hard stance against the criminal cartels that are there. Well, they're still related to the Mexican cartels, the Central and South American cartels. They are the ones that are bringing in the hard drugs and the marijuana. This is why Duterte has taken such a hard line against them. And remember, it was Duterte who started this execution plan, basically being the judge and jury and convicting people on site if he suspected or there was any kind of evidence that certain people were selling or smuggling drugs. Basically, what he was doing was putting their name in the paper, and the next morning, the execution squad would show up and execute these folks. That's the level of what's going on in Duterte's land. Remember, it was Obama who was told he couldn't come and visit and was going to be roundly rejected by Duterte as the president of the Philippines. And the main reason was that Duterte looked at Obama as the cause of his cartel problem. And this is something that a lot of people don't really understand, and they think this guy Duterte is crazy. Well, certainly you want people to have rights, and he's certainly violating all. That's his way of rejecting the cartels in his country who are just ravaging his population, and he knows that. So just remember, and I think your audience knows this, we have real civil rights afforded to us in this country, but in other countries it's a different issue because they don't have the same constitution or Declaration of Independence, it's a different place. Iran, as an example, is different. So is North Korea.
Well, I remember the Duterte-Obama rift. In fact, Duterte called him the son of a whore and a bunch of other unflattering things.
Right.
But what's interesting to me about that whole process is that we know that the president of the Philippines has also been battling ISIS.
Right.
ISIS. And let me give you a supposition here. This is something that I have thought, and I think I'm close to being right, is I have a lot of documentation, and I haven't closed the loop, but here's what I know. The arms that were used in the Las Vegas massacre at Mandalay Bay came from the Philippines, and they came via ISIS. I'm confident in saying that, and I'm confident in saying there was a CIA connection, and that Paddock was part of it at some point. I don't know if he was a Patsy Lee Harvey Oswald style or not. I'm working on that. But let me tell you what I do know is I do know there seems to be a link between the Philippines, ISIS, mass murder. And could that have been a beta test for what you said on my show 2.5 years ago when you had an embedded source at a CalExit meeting and the cartel said, if we can't exit, we'll just start murdering whiteys in public, words to that effect. Is there a relationship there or not?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Can you expand on that a little bit?
Well, you know, it goes back to even before that. You know, Timothy McVeigh, he was trained up, I believe, by the Taliban on explosives out of Subic Bay. When you take a look at this case that developed with Raymond Shrimp Boy Chow from Chinatown in San Francisco, who was helping Senator Leland Yee, a California state senator, smuggle weapons out of Subic Bay into the United States via New Jersey. And they weren't just any weapons. They were the weapons that were from the weapons cache of Benghazi. And that was all being facilitated by ISIS. And those weapons were going to be used here in California. We know that. They were going to be used to shoot down a major airlines that conveniently flies every, you know, 15 minutes in and out of airports around here. I'm not going to mention the name of it. But that was one of the targets. And I happened to have been available to have actually talked to some of the agents and who kind of filled me in on what was going on. They stood up to Obama and the administration. They ultimately did arrest and charge and convict Leland Yee for his actions and Raymond Shrimp Boy Chow, who were in direct negotiations with ISIS for weapons. Now, that was about 4 years ago. So this is all something that's been part of the mix. And clearly, the Philippines have been a major source of this irritation. Go back to McVeigh. You can go to Raymond Shrimp Boy Chow. And, of course, Raymond Shrimp Boy Chow was in contact with who? Dianne Feinstein. Remember, it was Dianne Feinstein's driver and aide who was long for about 11 years being followed by the FBI and known to be an absolute spy. He was contacting who? Raymond Shrimp Boy Chow out of San Francisco. I mean, these are the dots people have to connect so that they understand how this whole sinister cartel thing is working and how it's playing out here in California. And yeah, we visited this the other night at one of our meetings because people didn't quite believe it, but we had some people that were actually at that meeting, and I said, isn't that true? Didn't this happen that at this Tea Party meeting, this individual showed up and talked about this incident about we're going to kill all whites, and he came to us because he was quite concerned, and he's very sincere. I did a four-hour debrief on him and watched the videos, and he was right. That was the plan at the end in 2016 when the Obama administration was still in power. To question and maybe to encourage all of the gangs in California to rise up and basically, as they were saying, kill white people, European ancestry, and kill them out of California, get them out of California, which has, of course, been the plan that they've been executing in terms of businesses and jobs and colleges. You know, this college scandal that's going around right now for, you know, the enrollment, it's funny because here in California, the way it works now, and it didn't work this way when I first started in education, it was, you know, everybody who wanted to, who qualified could get into college. It was open. It was fair. But over the years, since the 90s, it got to be very corrupted. And what we were finding on enrollments coming out of schools, it started to be that young white men were discriminated against. In fact, they passed a Proposition 206, I think, Ward Connolly, that prohibited that in the mid-1990s, but yet they ignored it. They started discriminating against white girls. Then it was black girls, black boys. It was Hispanic. It got to be one fundamental commonality amongst all of them that they were being discriminated against. Forget about race. Forget about ethnicity. It was because they are American citizens, and that's where it's at now. If you're an illegal foreign national, you get put right to the front of the line for enrollment in California universities and colleges. And anybody who wants to deny that, go right ahead. But the facts are the facts. We all know this to be true. So when you start to take it that those levels of discrimination, you can see they want American citizens out of California. Of course, jobs are the same. You want a state job or a county job. It always goes to the illegal foreign national first before any citizen can get it. And I get these letters. I get calls. I mean, daily, this is the harangue against the state of California. Of course, anybody has a problem with the legal system, if you're white, if you're an American citizen, you're automatically in trouble over other people. So, and again, you can see what they're doing here in California to break us all down. But, you know, they understood, and this is in the 2016, at the end of the Obama administration, you know, they posed the question to a whole group of people that included a lot of gang members and a lot of people affiliated with gangs and minorities and ethnic groups here in California. Will you kill your fellow Americans to create a civil war so that California can exist as a free nation? And that was the question that was repeatedly being posed by these people. Five members of the Obama administration in one room. It happened down in Natomas, California, by the Mexican consulate. Yeah. Daryl Steinberg, the mayor of Sacramento, was the guy who held the meeting.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Absolutely amazing.
That was 2016-17.
I want to go back to Leland Yee for a second here, and you mentioned him in relationship to the shipping of Benghazi arms and the Chinese spy on Feinstein's, who was Feinstein's driver, was part of this. Are you aware that Yee was a major donor to Clinton?
I had heard that, yeah. It didn't surprise me when I heard it.
I did an investigation on it. In fact, I published it on thecommonsensehow.com. And here's what's interesting. This brings in Clinton's pay for play,
right?
Her involvement in Benghazi through another angle, an entirely different angle. We're seeing her linked back into Benghazi. But what I really find interesting here is that this ultimately leads, was the facilitation agent for the shipping of these arms, could it have been HSBC Bank?
Oh, the money was, absolutely. There's a, you know, I can't put my finger exactly on that, but I do know that HSBC is always involved with cartel transfers. It's the first place in which the cartels will funnel their money into Hong Kong Shanghai Bank. And, of course, for a long time, the guy who was the gatekeeper there was James Comey. And he was certainly the gatekeeper, as we know, because of Scott Bennett's great work, that he was the gatekeeper for Obama and Hillary Clinton to funnel money that would ultimately get into the Bank of Switzerland and into the hands of the CIA so they could buy weapons for and train ISIS, create ISIS and train
them.
We do know that.
I never got that part of it, but let me tell you what I did get from John Cruz, who set me on the path to find this. John Cruz was a senior VP at HSBC Bank, and he found boiler room operations quite by accident. He went and investigated. He said, man, they're stealing people's IDs, social security numbers. They're laundering Sinaloa drug cartel money through this. They're trafficking in kids and guns. And he tried to go to DHS under Obama. No way. They wouldn't have it. Then he went to the Eastern Division Attorneys of New York, Federal Division, headed by, guess who, Loretta Lynch, who gave HSBC a slap on the wrist.
Right.
And they paid a little fine, but no one went to jail. And John Cruz basically has to look over his shoulder every living moment he has left.
Right, right. And that's the
way I've interviewed him four times on this. And now these names are appearing. He did not know all the names, I don't think. But he did know about Comey. See, Comey was on the board of directors for HSBC at that time, serving out of London, if memory serves me correctly.
Right, right.
He was the weave we're getting here, Paul. This is this is incredible, but we're not the only ones now who are starting to see this. I'm starting to see elements of these reports appearing elsewhere.
Right.
And I'm thinking, weren't people listening to John Cruz and weren't people listening to Scott Bennett 4 and 5 years ago?
No. I know. You know, because it's been now, this is now 4 years ago that Scott Bennett, it'll be July 11th, 2019, 5 years or 4 years. In 2015, Scott Bennett appeared at the Liberty Tour in Nevada City, Nevada County, California, and it laid the whole thing out, 48-minute video. It's still out there. People can watch it. It's got about 1 million views on it now. And he laid the whole thing out about what happened. And, of course, what's really at a breaking point right now is that, as you know, Judicial Watch is now deposing people like Susan Rice. That's also the court gave permission for that to go forward. Now it's taken 4 years. It started on the 12th, and I guess they did some more on the 14th, and they're going to start back up again. There's a schedule. I posted it up on Agenda 21 Radio. There's a schedule now by which they're going to get even into Bed Rhodes. They're going to interview him, which I think is just going to be stupendous, because it's those clowns that basically came up with the whole narrative about it was a video that caused the death of Chris Stevens and Ty Woods.
Oh, that's ridiculous. You know, that,
I know.
No one believes that in their right mind.
Well, they had it going for a while, and that lasted all the way through the election, enough to get Obama elected. And that's all they needed. But that was...
I sigh a heavy sigh because I saw the BS in it the minute I saw it in print.
Sure.
It's like I said, 50% of the country, Paul, is dumber than a box of rocks. They're choosing to be. And anyone that could believe that would be an excuse for what happened, unbelievable.
Well, I have to say to people like Steve Fenton, that congratulations for staying with it, because clearly our government did not. And now this is problematic for them. It's very problematic for them. And I think we're going to get some clarity on some of the behind the scenes. All of Hillary Clinton's immediate aides are going to be questioned as well. So I think this is going to be a watershed, and I think we're going to start to see some real action against Comey in particular, and even Mueller. I think Mueller is very much concerned about what's going to happen, because, as you know, Mueller's got a whole bunch of dirt, a lot of dirty money out of the Ukraine, and you know he doesn't want all that stuff out there, but... You know, we've been talking about it on Agenda 21 Radio for about 2 years.
Well, when you talk about Mueller, I've published this 3 times since July of 2017, because it's like people don't get it. I've got something called the Rosatom Memo from Russia. It names Comey as the agent delivering the highly enriched uranium for the first time to a Russian airport. And then I've got a State Department memo that corroborates. I don't know how he's getting away with this. I mean, he's knee-deep, he's neck-deep in Uranium-1, and we executed the Rosenbergs for less than what he and Hillary and Bill Clinton have done.
That's right.
Selling uranium to our enemies.
That's right. And, you know, we're hoping that things are working their way out. We haven't gotten this far ever in these investigations, and all of a sudden things are starting to happen. You know, this whole thing with the colleges and universities, this is really kind of a nothing burger to a lot of people, but it is sending some clear messages to the universities anyway, which is, I think, something you have to start off on and to drain the swamp in. And they certainly are picking the right universities to start draining that swamp. It's kind of interesting when you go look at the faculty of these universities, how many Marxists and Maoists you have, particularly Chapman University of Orange, California, might add. But also UCLA and USC. There's just tons of Marxists there, and I think there's going to be some draining of some of these Marxists as we're starting to see already. But this whole thing that's going on with our government, and especially with the the Mueller investigation, I think that's going to come to an end, in a very bad end for Mueller and his team, and also for the Democrats.
Only if there's someone in charge to enforce the rules.
Right, right.
Otherwise, it'll be like Obama. And Holder's contempt of Congress under Fast and Furious, sweep it under the carpet, defy Congress, it'll just go away.
Right.
And that's what I'm afraid of.
Especially if you take a look at the Senate that we have right now and what they did with Trump. You know, prompted the veto.
The key is Trump acting. And I will tell you, since I spoke to you last night, when I bemoaned the fact that Trump isn't active in some areas, there's a glimmer of hope, and I want to give credit where credit's due. I told you about the conversation I had in front of Doug Hagman, Joe Hagman, and I talked to someone who communicates with Trump on a regular basis, and I laid out the open forum laws, the antitrust laws. He took notes. He told me something would happen, and Trump came out 5 days later and did make an announcement that paralleled some of what I had said, and I thought, here we go. And we might be able to save the House from the Democrats in the midterm. And that was September of last year. And Trump didn't follow up. However, today, Paul, I think this is very revealing. Judge Jeanine Pirro has been suspended. We don't know if she's fired at the time of this broadcast. Tucker Carlson's under fire. And Trump came out and said he's defending them. And he also said in a separate statement that he's coming after big tech for illegal censorship. Do you think he's ready to act finally after 2 years?
Yeah, I do. I think he has a different attorney general. And from what I was listening to the other day on the veto conversation, Barr was brutally honest and brutally strong. And I think if you were part of the Clinton group and you heard his comments about how the president had every right to veto this and how he had every right to issue the order and was standing on his heads over heel for Trump's decision. If you're in that other camp, you got to be worried now. I mean, that's the first time I've ever been able to say, yippee, we have somebody on our side that's now an attorney general for the last 8 to 12 years. And he came out very, very strong in support of the president. So that, I think that's a game changer. I think if that's that's a glimmer of hope.
I think you're right. And I think along the same lines, Paul, in our pre-discussion previous to this interview, I said to you that you take people like Nancy Pelosi, she has to be personally benefiting in some way for her to block all measures at the border. I mean, here we have a fentanyl crisis, we have an opioid crisis, we have all these crises coming across the border. It defines what an emergency is, and yet she says no emergency. So is she connected to places like Humboldt County? Is she connected to this organized crime network that we identified right at the top of the show?
Well, I think she's a big part of the network. You know, I think the whole Pelosi machine is a big part of the network up there. Especially when it comes to water, we know that her family is very deeply involved with the water issues of Northern California. Of course, water issues of Northern California is a $1 trillion business. Let's not forget about that. It's the water capital of California, obviously, but there's a lot of money to be made in water. And of course, if you're following Agenda 21, and if you're following the Agenda 2030 program, what you're doing is able to get people off their property and capture their water rights, which is golden because there's going to be a need for water in Southern California as it grows. But the other part of it is there are plans that I've understood that where they want to sell water to Northern Mexico.
Aren't they already diverting? This is something I was told in Pelosi's first go around with being the Speaker of the House. I was told by an insider, but we were talking about something else entirely, so I didn't pursue it. And this gentleman said to me, Dave, watch Pelosi, too, when you get a chance. As an aside from what we're talking about, she's making money on diverting water to Mexico and depriving Colorado, Arizona, and California of rightful access to the water. Do you know anything about what he could have been referring to?
Well, yeah. The way the water's world in California is configured, it's very regulated, obviously, for everybody's greed. You got to remember that the California Water Project ended with Jerry Brown in the mid-1970s when he failed to produce or continue the construction of the Auburn Dam, which went to the phase, so far into the phase, they built the actual foundation for the dam in the sides of the mountain, but they never completed the project. New California, by the way, will complete that project, as well as the rest of the dams and aquifers and aqueducts that need to go into completing the California Water Project. So there's not going to be any of this, quote, drought business going on. And it's going to definitely change the whole financial picture for how water and water rights are bought and sold in California. That's the game. You game the system and you make profit off the gaming as water is transported up and down or down the state into Southern California and those places that need water. And she's got the game going on starting in the upper tier of Northern California. Those are her districts. Those are the places she controls. And she puts out all of her little camper minions and so on to make sure that the counties are tightly controlled that benefit her and her water projects.
I'm hearing she even has, well, in the same discussion I was told, she had buy-in from some officials in Oregon, and some of the southern Oregon counties were also involved, in addition to like Siskiyou County, Humboldt, and so forth. Do you know anything about that?
Oh, yeah, that's true. I mean, I know that to be true. I know those discussions have happened, and they have allied characters. I don't want to mention any names because we know who the cast of characters are up there, and we know what they're doing and how they're trying to do it. And you know, they
have radio shows, correct?
They communicate in many different ways, including the courtroom.
okay. Oh, Paul, I'm biting my tongue here because I know the names. Mm-hmm. I've called them out on my own show. So if people want to do a fact-finding check of the people I've called out in Northern California, it's all there. I'm sorry, I got to get a hold of myself here. But the source that gave me that information about Pelosi and Mexican water was the same source that broke the story to me about Benghazi and the attempted mutiny against Obama administration to save Stevens, hoping he'd sing like a canary and bring that administration down.
Right.
It was a coup of opportunity that was interrupted by CIA number twos in command. And this person said in the same conversation about Pelosi, I mean, talk about two home runs. I got the first one right. I didn't get the second one right. Now I'm making up for lost time, four and a half years later. And I got to tell you, when I look in Humboldt County, what I see here is a criminal element so pervasive that the model I'm finding is imitated in many other cities. In other words, here's my fear. You and I both know this model in Humboldt is not unique to Humboldt. It's across the West.
Right.
I haven't pinned it to the East, but it's west. It's west of the Rocky Mountains. Paul, the biggest thing that I fear here is a Tet Offensive kind of deal where on a single day, these criminal elements unified, including Chinese nationals, will rise up and bring holy hell to this country in one day of a big purge. Am I being paranoid here or what?
No, not at all. In fact, as you know, and we've talked about this many, many times, we didn't really know each other at the time when we were actually, you know, talking about this in two separate shows and different directions, but we had sources that were telling us. By the way, I had my sources and you had yours, and they were, you know, when you have that kind of situation going on, you've got dozens of people that you're talking to and I'm talking to, and they're saying the same thing, and then events happen, and it happens exactly as they say. You have a tendency to believe them. And the stories and what we have been told is that there's going to be this day that they all plan for. And this is something that is probably in the near future where they might attempt to pull something off where it suddenly happens all at one time. And I don't want to get into the logistics of it. I think you are very clear about what we've talked about. But this is something that the specter of this, I think, is rising every single day. And part of that is because I think the other side realizes there's a fair amount of desperation on their side, that they're afraid they're losing grip, which I think they are as our economy grows and as more information is starting to come out and people are being, you know, challenged for the truth. I think they're going to get more and more desperate as they are, as I believe. You're starting to see it on TVs, the news programs, that sort of thing. I think they're going to try and pull something off. And I tell people, make sure you are armed, you have access to arms for self-preservation and protection, follow all laws. don't be violent, but you know, you have the right to protect yourself, and there may be that time in the near future in which you're called upon to do that. This is a warning I've been giving for years. I think you've been given the same warning, and I think we're getting closer to those events, possibly, because of the circumstances that the cartels and others find themselves in right now.
Yeah, let me just give you two examples to verify exactly what you're saying. So people who are new to this material aren't saying that we're just making this up. When I attempted to help Stacy Lynn from Fort Collins, Colorado, get her son back when he was taken illegally without cause by a judge brought in who was working for the IMF and the World Bank at the same time. Unbelievable. They brought her in to do a child custody case in Colorado in a vacated position. And she took their kid. And what I found out in my investigation is that the Larimer County sheriffs and other public officials in that county, and this is what the locals have told me by the dozens, have been trafficking in kids for years. And her anti-Agenda 21 work was bumping up against that accidentally. She didn't know. And here we see a whole community undermined by the very forces we're talking about. And when you talk about Fort Collins, you're talking about Humboldt, but it's a more civilized version of Humboldt. But let me give you where the big one is. I don't remember how many years ago, maybe 4 years ago, I wrote an article said, Texas, prepare to defend yourself. And I had a confidential source inside the Texas Rangers that was brought to me by a mutual acquaintance who agreed to talk to me on conditions of anonymity. And he told me that they had uncovered plans that in the Texas Rangers that ISIS and other terrorists were intermingling with regular immigrants coming into the country, and they were preparing to overtake police stations and kill all the police in a local small town and subjugate as many people as they could by killing them, kidnapping them, putting them into bondage before the government could respond. And I said, how many communities are we talking about? And he said, I don't know, but I think it might be too many to count. Mm-hmm. And Paul, I offer these two stories up as evidence that the Humboldt model is alive and well across the West.
Well, I would say that there's a great deal of truth to that. And, of course, if people wanted to know why we have been pounding on the table for the last probably 5 or 6 years about this immigration business and the caravanning, you know, this caravanning and this the smuggling of humans started really as a trickle years and years and years ago. Now we're up to thousands at a time coming across the border. It's going to be, you know, maybe over 1 million people just this year alone. OTMs, other than Mexicans, mostly. That's what they're finding right now. And we have been reporting to this ad nauseum for years. And here it is on a bigger scale. It's pretty obvious that people need to be prepared for something that's going to be eventual. You know, but you're right. The model is alive and well in various communities. We have some up here in Northern California, and, of course, one of the big ones was in the Paradise, in the Paradise Fire. We now know that we have elements of these individuals that actually bought property before the fire. This is kind of interesting. Bought property before the fire, and as the fire went through and burned their homes, plus everybody else's homes, they resurfaced as leaders of the Delphi meeting types that they've been holding up there so that it would facilitate the ultimate a situation where the homeowners that had their properties burned out would ultimately sign over their deeds and everything else to FEMA.
When you say Delphi, I know what you're talking about. Can you tell the audience?
It's a Delphi meeting technique. It's a technique used by a number of people. It was developed by the RAND Corporation, and I've been trained in the Delphi technique and used it dozens and dozens of times, mostly for school administration purposes for people to reach a certain outcome or reach an outcome on their own design. And what they do with the Delphi technique with the Agenda 21 folks, all these people who have an agenda to try and take rural property in particular, and you see this with the regionalism programs that are out there where you have county governments that buy into regional governance, which is governance by individuals that are appointed from counties and cities into one regional program that has jurisdiction over multiple counties and multiple cities. That's the regionalism design. But these folks use Delphi technique meetings so that they can come in and they can have a meeting in which the people are going to reach the outcome that the designers of the meeting have in mind. And that's what's happening here, that they embedded these people in homes, their homes burned down, just like everybody else, but then they have now resurfaced to be community leaders. working with the government, working with the city council, working with the county people, working with FEMA. And ultimately, a lot of the people are finding out that these meetings that they're holding are all really designed so that they will actually turn over their property to the government or sell out at at pennies on the dollars. That's really kind of what's going on. There's a little more to it, but that's fundamentally what's going on. And these people
Is this part of the displacement of the white Europeans?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, everybody up there is white pretty much and retirement and gun, Second Amendment conservatives. That's just everybody up there in that area. But then you have the community of Chico, which is right down the road, which is incredibly liberal, and it's got monuments to sustainability. The big hands that you see when the sustainability, they've got 10-foot monolithic monuments to this down in Chico. So it's kind of a hotbed for all these areas. And clearly they use these techniques. We hear this all the time from our folks that are in the New California State Movement. And, of course, they don't like the New California State Movement because it's a resistance to them. But when we form our new state, they'll have to deal with us.
How far away are you from reforming the state into New California?
The thing people need to watch is the markets and what's happening to the economy in California. The government taxes that are taken in, that's going to be the telling issue. California government will fail to make its minimums in terms of numbers that they have to have money to in order to run themselves and conduct governance. They're going to run out of that money. They're already starting to. It's day 17. We started the countdown on March 1st. We looked at they're going to start really running out of cash in September, October, in that era. Probably see a downgrade in terms of their ability to borrow to the point where people will not lend the money. And at that point in time, California's government will cease to exist in terms of being able to pay their bills. That could be in October through December in that time frame. And that's going to be a turning point for us because we feel that we'll be able to negotiate our new state. And ultimately, because of the model that we will offer in our new state, it'll be a model of economic explosion, if you will. We'll be one of the largest economic machines on the planet. We'll have a lot of gas, a lot of natural resources, oil. We'll be able to fund ourselves that way. We'll slash taxes, rebuild the education program, protect the southern border. And we will cease to be a welfare state, which is, California is the largest state in the union, but it's also by far the largest welfare state in the union as well. California gives up a dollar, when you give up a dollar to the federal government, California gets $1.47 in return from the federal government. And of course, that's been the system that's been gamed that Donald Trump stopped with Jerry Brown. So California is hurting. They were down $4.8 billion in tax revenue in December, $3.5 in January, and then they're down another off 56% on some of the tax revenues just on personal income tax. I think they're down about $2.5 to $3 billion for February. We, of course, don't have the March numbers yet. But that's the trend that's happening. They cannot sustain themselves with those kind of losses. And then Donald Trump didn't give them the $9 billion they wanted for fire. So,
yeah, I remember that. Yeah, and we know why. But let me ask you this question then. When we take a look at – let me tell you what's coming to me. I'll put it this way. I'm getting inklings out of California. And with some of the sources I've developed inside Humboldt County now, with people willing to speak because we now are giving them a voice, and what they're telling me is that they believe that CalExit is being funded by some of these illicit funds coming out of Humboldt County and surrounding areas, and they're building up a stockpile, and they're preparing to exit at a time of their choosing. They thought before the 2020 election. I think it has to be sooner given the dire straits they're in. But their long and short is this. You'll have your new California movement, but they'll retain L.A., San Francisco, across to the Central Valley in Sacramento, Stockton, Fremont, and so forth. And that will be the CalExit that exits, and they can bring economic ruination to the country because of the retail impact and because of the agricultural impact. I'd like you to respond to that.
That's one of the plans that I've heard about. I've heard of about a dozen different plans and scenarios in which they're going to try and separate. I think that they will have absolutely zero support generally in the population. I'll give you an example. California has no Republican Party at all now. It's a Republican Party that hates Donald Trump, and they're not really Republicans as we would understand in the traditional sense. It's kind of like those 12 guys who voted against against Trump, you know, in the immigration, the emergency proclamation that he gave. They're kind of like those folks. And so what we have is a dead party system here. We have one dead party and another one on the heels of dying. And they ran sort of a beta test. They ran out what's called the New Way California movement. They started that actually last year. And then this year, just last Wednesday, they had a big meeting that they planned to have in Sacramento at the Crest Theater, holds about 1,000, and only 80 people showed up. That's Arnold Schwarzenegger, Kasich, Chad May, other people that are really important, supposedly important Republicans, and they're talking about how they're different Republicans. They hate Trump. They want to move away from the National Republican Party, and that was just a no-go. It flopped. I think CalExit flops. They will not have popular support. And there is their problem, and they never will have it. They're not going to get it from Republicans or Democrats across the state. Nobody wants to leave the union of states that we call the United States of America, and that's their problem. They are using traditional attitudes that would come from another country, such as China, such as Afghanistan. You know, they think they can arm people, drug people, compromise people, and somehow they're going to break up this union. That's not going to happen. And there's some truth to the design of what California is going to look like. And New California will pretty much be what the way it's been drawn up on the map already, which will include about 80 to 85% of the urban areas of California. I just don't think they have the oomph. But the problem, Dave, is the danger that they're going to do something stupid to kill off a lot of people.
That's where I was going to go next, yes. Talk about that.
That's the problem. And that they could do that. That's because they're desperate. And
well, let me tell you what else was suggested to me that goes hand in hand with what you just said and what I said in my question, is that I've been told one of the motivations for the Sinaloas and the local cartels that participate with them is that they want Reconquista de Aztlan, which is to basically have an 8-state area they control that's an independent country, and it's looked at as kind of a repatriation of old Mexico lost in the Mexican War.
Yeah, that's the gig is at Aztlan, and that is, you know, you worked in the schools in southern in the Southwest. You understand that that's been the mantra that ever since the they say since the Mexican American War and the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo back in 1846, that for some reason the Mexicans now have always claimed the northern areas that were lost in that treaty. Well, that's just really not true. The people who really started that were extremists, communists, who started that in Mexico, that whole call for that. But they've been pushing it to the population to the point where everybody believes that that's the way it's supposed to be. And the truth of the matter is that there was no desire for Aztlan. There was a great deal of anxiety in the territory. They wanted to be with the United States of America, so much for and against Mexico. California and Texas both. You know, California and Texas are known as the Lone Star States. They started out as Lone Star States. They also started out with similar constitutions and design. They started out in the same year, 1836. And this is the thing that when you take a look at California, you say, oh, no, it was 1848 and all this stuff, the Sonoma and the Bear Flag Revolt. It's not true. Alta California formed in 1836 and declared their independence in 1836 from Mexico, because Mexico had created at that time what was a communist state. They didn't know what it was, but Mexico declared themselves independent from Spain and the Vatican in 1821. By 1821, the Californios in Alta California were fed up with the, quote, centralized government in Mexico, and they declared themselves independent. That was the first time that had happened. They forget that history. Everybody does. They forget the history of these brave Californios who declared independence from Mexico. At the same time, Texas was doing the same thing. That's why they're both known as republics. California operated as a free republic, really, when ultimately there was this revolt in 1848. It only operated for 22 days, but it still claims that name on the flag, republic, similar to what Texas was. So there's a lot of history that people don't understand, and that blow-up of the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo is false. It's a fallacy, but it's something that the communists, Trotsky in particular, was the one who honed that one ever stronger when he came to Mexico. Also, ultimately, you know, he was assassinated. But he's the one who started that whole thing. So communism was on the rise even then.
Boy, we keep coming back to this endpoint. And I've heard it, I think, three times in our conversation. They're running out of time, they being the bad guys, to ferment the withdrawal of California. And they absolutely have to start a series of false flags, a la Mandalay Bay, which I maintain was a beta test. I mean, do you think this is true? And what is it going to look like? What forms is it going to take? I mean, do you have any ideas? Have you found anything out?
I think that they have some grand designs, and I think that they're trying to find where they can actually have some solid footing to create a revolution in California. I think that they've been thrown off. I think that they have some inherent problems with it. And the inherent problems stem from the fact that law enforcement across the state will not support them. And that is a fact. The sheriffs have had it. Where they really blew it, Dave, in their planning, is the sanctuary state thing, which has been blown up in their faces. And I do want to say that New California has had a major, major impact on the thinking of a lot of these counties, a lot of these municipalities who have stood up against sanctuary state status. And now the sheriffs are becoming more emboldened because they're seeing that what Gavin Newsom and the other dictators here in California want to diminish their constitutional roles in counties, which would ultimately dissolve, of course, counties. And there would be no lawful administration of the Constitution, which is what sheriffs are supposed to do. And I think they're thrown off because the sheriffs are now realized, a lot of them have, more and more and more, that they are the last bastion by which we can protect the Constitution. And the only people that they have to report to is the Constitution and the people who elected them in their own counties. They don't have to operate with being told by their county supervisors what to do and when to do it and where to report to. That's not the way it works. The sheriff can tell them what to do, and they better do it. You know, so there's this attack that's going on with sheriffs, and it's not being received well. And I think they blew it with the sanctuary state thing. If they had left that alone, I think they could have bred within the sheriffs and law legal system, but they crossed too many lines. And I think this is their failure.
I get that. There's one other aspect to this, and we'll have to do a follow-up interview on this because we only got about a minute and a half left. But I wanted to say this to you, Paul. I can't help believe that now that the Oroville Dam is facing new problems, that this could be leveraged into something. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. Yeah, there's a real risk going on. In fact, I was receiving phone calls and information over the minutes just before we went on air here, it's a real problem. There's a leak, and the leak in this brand spanking new $1.1 billion investment in making a new spillway plus a new emergency spillway is all for naught. It's leaking from the same spot at which it was damaged to begin with. So they didn't fix the major problem. So that's going to be the main problem to begin with. So now it's going to be very problematic. We're going to lose that whole system up there again as soon as the water starts flowing over it, which could be any day now, because water, we're at about 161% of our seasonal norms because we're just getting in it. And by the way, we're going to get pulverized this week with the storms coming in from the El Nino coming in from the Pacific Ocean, which is on its way right now.
I know. What a great great distraction for the
right.
left.
Right.
Paul, we're going to have to do a follow-up on Orville as it really materializes, because it's once again coming into prominence. And I'm getting people writing to me who are telling me some of the things you're telling me, little bits and pieces. So this information is not just isolated to you. This is something that has gotten out, and they can't contain the flow. Anyway, Paul, in the time that's left, tell people how they can follow your good work.
Well, Agenda 21 Radio, we're on Red State Talk Radio Live, 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. Pacific. And then, of course, that's from 9 to noon Eastern on Red State Talk Radio, the talk monster, 36 hours of talk radio. And also NewCaliforniaState.com. You can get all of the news and information about what's going on there, town halls, that sort of thing. And, of course, the Constitutional Convention. We have our fourth Constitutional Convention coming up May 17th and 18th. We're going to be presenting more resolutions. We have four resolutions before the president right now. He has accepted them from New California, and we know we're going to be presenting more of those resolutions to him.
And you said if you accepted them, in other words, you've got approval now. Do you have to get congressional votes in your favor to become a state?
Yes, and we're at the early stages. We have to get the consent of the legislature. That's our first hurdle, which I think we're going to actually climb over that one quite easily because of the financial demise of California. That's why we're on financial watch. Tomorrow, of course, will be day 18. And then, of course, the Congress has to approve it as well. So, and that's a whole other strategy that goes on. But, yes, we have to have that approval. But it doesn't mean that we cannot communicate with the president, the leader of the United States, with our concerns, and we've done that. We have four resolutions we've presented the president, and we know that he's accepted them. We've gotten the communication back.
I just worry about the House siding with you because they are run by the Democrats. So we'll have to see. Hey, Paul, I want you to stay on the line with me just for a second after we sign off. And to everybody else, we've got another terrific guest coming up here after the break. I want you to stay with us. This has been most informative. And let me tell you, what I'm researching and Marilyn's researching and Paul's researching, we're only scratching the surface. Let me tell you, the revelations are so drastic. El Chapo is naming Pelosi now. I mean, that's just one example. Folks, I'm telling you, it's going to get really interesting. We have just set the stage for future shows, future articles with what's going on. Paul, thanks so much for joining us. Just hang on for a second here during the break. Everybody else will be back after a word from these sponsors.